Radio Alchemy.
Eclipsing conventional wisdom.
And hello, loves, and welcome to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles and San Diego 98.7 FM in lovely Santa Barbara. How are you guys? What is with this wacky weather, huh? 80s, 90s, gets kind of nippy at night. You must regulate your body temperature because somehow when you get a chill, and it's not thrilling to get a chill now, you get bitten by something. You get bitten by a bug. And no matter if it's just a little cold, if it's seasonal influenza, somebody wants to put you down as a statistic. Somebody wants to say that you have contracted the flying pig flu so that they can add it on to all the rotation of the media cycles and freak everybody out. You know, everybody was pretty cool, you know, when they kept hearing about this oncoming deal and people weren't going for those shots. They just weren't even interested in that muckraking. And then all of a sudden they came out with the children. Go to the children. Start hopping on the children. Make the mothers feel guilty. Make the men feel like they're not protecting their families. And look at the lines blow up. Look at everybody complain that they can't get the syringe into their butt. An amazing mass psychological experimentation happening right in front of our eyes. It's been going on quite a bit here. The media and its environment, and how it's so easy to tick-tock your little clock, you know? But a lot of you are unhinged. A lot of you have taken that thread out. A lot of you have been reminded about the power of media and its ecological system and how it's so wrapped into you. And so tonight we have on the lines a couple of mavens of the radio, of media, of its incredible impact, complexity, and how this organism just keeps on ticking and growing and being so useful. It's useful in this kind of way right here, but it's also useful as a trickle-down sledgehammer, as a cattle prod to get you to go in this or that direction. Amazing stuff. And so tonight, Jerry Fialco is with us, the man that runs the McLuhan readers group over at the Venice Library and does so much with his digital avant-garde cinema festivals that he put on at Midnight Books. And he does so much in keeping alive and keeping your head bubbling around McLuhan and media. And, of course, the man who brought us all into the thick of it, Bob Dobbs, joins us here tonight. And they're going to be with us for 2 hours as we just munch on media and munch on McLuhan and why this is so valid and important in this day and age as we see this extended media come in and kind of agitate and prop you up and sit you down. But these people are here. These gents are here as reminders of the original source is you. And what does it mean to have this kind of looped feedback into your biological, chemical, mystery, astral body network and all of that radio, television feedback? Great stuff. Let me welcome to the airwaves Jerry Fialco. Hey, Jerry, how are you?
I'm great, Evan. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, and coming out of the Netherlands, Bob Dobbs. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Hey, Evan. It's marvelous to be inside your delicious voice again.
Hey, and to have yours, too. You know, I want to ask you guys first, talking about a little bit of popular culture before we launch into the thick of it. This weekend, we're going to see a couple of films open up, Men Who Stare at Goats, which is the John Ronson book that's been turned into a film about black budget psychic warfare, you know, something around the little shadow warriors who were there to try and become the next level of assassin through psychic abilities. And then we have The Fourth Kind opening up, which is, you know, they say you already know that there are three kinds of contact with aliens. Well, here's the fourth kind, abduction. And so they're coming out. Obviously, they're listening to a little bit of late night radio, so bravo to them. But they are coming out with scenarios, you know, and I can't wait to see them open up. And then, of course, ABC just launched the new version of V on Tuesday nights at 8, and I hope everybody checked that out, because that's going to be, as Ion would say, very delicious, because it is very multifaceted, showing all of the different elements that we would love, that we would talk about on a conspiratorial nature, right there, broad daylight, for everybody to see. And the media has been doing so much with the kind of things that we speak about late at night. And I'm wondering, in your guys' opinion, why it is they are finally feeding off of this. I mean, you know, sci-fi has been around for a long time, but now they are really taking the area of conspiracy quite seriously as a moneymaker, as a fear maker, as an agitator, and putting really big special effects bucks behind it. Heroes, Fringe, Dollhouse, the United States of Terra, all of these things about multiple personalities, and things like that, right out there in the media. Bob, what is your take on what is being done through the radio and television spectrum of this kind of material?
Well, as usual, I've always been the leading edge of the leading edge of the leading edge, and I talked about this 20 years ago. I predicted the death of the Illuminati, the death of the UFO, the death of these memes, and they have disappeared as the last couple of years, especially on the popular scene and what's happening in Wall Street. There is no controls on any level, universal or personal. And so when something is over, that means it's obsolete. And then for the money world, it is workable. And so you're having this meme being replayed by the larger Android meme to reinforce the idea that there could be an Illuminati, a UFO invasion, or an MKUltra, or a Fringe, or a fast flash forward. It is the sign of its disappearance. We should be dancing for these. It's over. It doesn't work anymore, but they can make a lot of bucks on the after image.
So if they can make bucks off it, that means that they believe there'll be an audience. Why is there still an audience for it?
Because there's young people, and young people cannot process all the phases that are laid out in my tiny note chart within 10, 15 years. They're replaying these cycles. They'll love the 60s, the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and the 40s and 50s. They'll replay the 20th century for the next 40 years, each generation. They're working through the bardos of media entrapment.
Oh, that's
beautiful. They have to do this.
Oh, that's beautiful. So it's a regurgitation, and this is where did the previous generation get up to the point of multiple personalities? Was that maybe Manchurian Candidate that came out in 1960, the idea of those kind of manipulated warriors? So that was our pinnacle human experimentation coming out for that generation, and now the next leap for the XY, whatever they are, whatever they're being called, the XX generation, they are introducing them to the idea of, like, the United States of Terra, which is a high-level dissociative, personality syndrome. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. You had three faces of Eve in the 60s.
Okay, three faces
of
Eve.
So it's now quadrophenia of the Android meme itself. So I made a pattern recently. You look at the famous Doctor Who series, started on November 23rd, 1963, right after November 22nd, mm-hmm. and it was a replay of The Time Machine, you know, H.G. Wells, Flash Gordon, and monster movies. And now if you look at, in this decade, you have this great series called Lost. I really enjoy it. Started on September 22nd, 2004. That's a replay, holopathic replay of Twin Peaks, Gilligan's Island, and Lost in Space.
Hmm.
And then 2 years later, on July 18th, 2006, a new series started called Eureka. You can still watch it. Still going.
Right.
And it was a replay of The Andy Griffith Show plus MacGyver. And then you have the great Fringe series, which is totally about me and Ion. It's incredible. Walter looks like me. A lot of people have pointed that out. But anyways, mm-hmm. Fringe, starting on September 9th, 2008, it's a replay of Magnum P.I., mm-hmm. Barnaby Jones, Batman, and Macabre Special Effects.
Mm-hmm.
Then you come into an interesting series started this summer, July 7th, called Warehouse 13.
Yes.
That's a replay of McHale's Navy, Hogan's Heroes, MacGyver, Get Smart, Torchwood, and Wild West. Just like Finnegan's Wake, replays of previous media memes.
Right.
Redone again with new twists for the young batch today, as Captain Beefheart said. Best batch yet. And then you have Flash Forward, really good series.
Yes.
Started on September 24th, replay of Quantum Leap, 7 days, and Macabre Special Effects itself. So, is that referring to Thomas Pynchon's V? Came out in 1962. What is V?
V is the alien invasion, reptilian invasion.
Saying that's been redone, though.
Yes, yes. It was originally, I think, a cable series that that was out in the, in the 80s, I believe. And so, yeah, it was about, you know, reptilians harvesting human beings. It's kind of like that Twilight Zone episode, To Serve Man, you know, but brought up with these short-snouted reptilians with nice superficial human skin on them.
That famous series, famously the Twilight Zone or Outer Limits, called The Xantes, 1963, around the time of the Kennedy assassination. The Xantes. Look that one up. Wikipedia Xantes. I don't know if it begins with X or Z. Z-A-N-T-E-S.
Right.
That's a good one.
Okay.
Robin, I would like to reinstate the idea that James Joyce said our pastimes are our pastimes in 39. So to answer your original question and thought, this is not a recent phenomenon. Finnegan's Wake did this in 39. These guys like the Masons, the British Secret Police, and the CIA were studying Finnegan's Wake. But remember, all this pop culture you're talking about, if it works, it's obsolete. If it's current, it's obsolete. See, we're doing a discussion on Finnegan's Wake on the radio late at night. So we are doing the medium is the massage right now. And so that is mirroring and matching what Bob is talking about, and I appreciate you having us. You know, I want to thank, first of all the KPFK satellite conductors over the year, from Lou Hill to you, Evan, to Roy, and to David Porter, who first aired Bob years ago.
Yeah.
The discussion group that came out of that Bob radio show on David Porter morphed into the Marshall McLuhan Finnegan's Wake Reading Club, which is in its 14th year now.
Wow.
That should tell you something, Mr. Dobbs. And has actually relocated to the Marina Del Rey Library because we're closer to the ocean. As Frank said, Zappa, the ocean is the ultimate solution. Now, I'd love to ask Bob about why it's necessary to drive us to sleep tonight, Bob, or be stoned awake when we're having this experience on the radio late at night. You know, Hollis Frampton, the great experimental filmmaker, said, in order to lecture on film, I need to do it in a dark room. So maybe Bob could just discuss the phenomenon that we're using the radio, which is what Finnegan's Wake was all about, and we're doing it in the middle of the night when everyone's sleeping. And you must remember, when you sleep, you still hear.
Excellent, excellent. Good intro there. Yes, Finnegan's Wake is the map for all these shows that we're talking about. Every show that's been replayed here is already in Finnegan's Wake. John Bishop, who Jerry quotes, is complimenting him on his workshop, who wrote the Book of the Dark in 1984. Unfortunately, he failed to realize Finnegan's Wake was about the radio experience in print. He talks about the Book of the Dark and the dreaming and the sleep state. But we used to say on the radio 20 years ago we were here to drive people sleep because we were Finnegan's Awake. The title Finnegan's Wake is a satire on the alarmist and on the one who's demanding expansion of consciousness from, you know, Christian Murdy, L. Ron Hubbard, Terrence McKenna to Eben, sometimes to me, but I'm quadriphenic and don't remain in that zone all the time. Mm-hmm. The demand of expansion of consciousness is what Finnegan's Wake is satirizing. So we're here to drive you to sleep, is my major mantra at Dobstown.
Why satirize it?
Well, satirize means looking at something so you see it. If you don't know that you're swimming in the water, then you're having a good time. We're here to create pain, and pain is the only way you can experience yourself. If you just experience the bland constant of bliss, you have no contrast and you don't appreciate it. We're here to create contrast, mm-hmm. which is tactility. Mm-hmm.
Now, could I just read a quote by Franz Kafka, because we always say here at the Fielka Funny Farm that KPFK stands for Keep Perpetuating Franz Kafka. This may go along with what Bob just said. This is Franz Kafka. Quote, I think we ought to read only the kind of books that wound and stab us. If the book we are reading doesn't wake us up with a blow to the head, what are we really reading it for? We need books that affect us like a disaster, that grieve us deeply, like the death of someone we loved more than ourselves, like being banished into the forest far from everyone, like a suicide. A book must be an ice axe to break the frozen sea that fills us. That's Franz Kafka in Frank Zappa, Effects Precede Causes, said, I want a guitar solo like an ice pick to the forehead.
That's a good quote. You know, the problem is the book does not activate people like that today. The only book that could do that is Finnegan's Wake. It's the last book, and therefore the realization of the book meme. How do you wake up people? How do you drive them to sleep today when the numbness is so contradictory and paradoxical that everybody is fully awake, as Leonard Cohen sings, everybody knows, everybody knows. Yes, it's collective consciousness now. There is no unconscious, but we're unconscious about how we got there.
Right, and Bob, the Zen masters, as you know, Roy, we're going to probably go into Roy world with Christian Murty being in the wake and a little Alan Watts, but the Zen masters say you get Satori every night when you're asleep, but the trick is to do it when you're awake. So could you tell us what was Joyce's trick? You know, how did you, and also your trick, how are you matching and or making Joyce's trick? You know, the great book came out in 2007, we were all waiting for, How Joyce Wrote Finnegan's Wake. But what's the real meta backstory how Joyce did it, Bob?
Okay, first of all, I'll quote page 81 of Finnegan's Wake. Joyce says, and this is the key point, he says, yes, the viability of vicinals, if invisible, is invincible. So vicinals are the environments that you live in and you're not really always paying attention to. You take them for granted. So, yes, the viability of vicinals, if invisible, is invincible. And when you're literate, these environments are invincible and invisible, because the literacy extends your eye, makes it precise, but numbs the other senses in relation to it. So you miss the comprehensive vision. But I want to tell something that's never been said before. The reason Finnegan's Wake started, the reason that the original agenda by Joyce was that he was angry at what Dante had created. Christianity before Dante had no imagination or an imaginary of hell, or the levels of hell. That was created by Dante in the Divine Comedy and his writings. He mapped out, and this was before the printing press, the levels of hell that all these people would go through based on actions and behaviors in their life. And then when the printing press came along and spread it all over the world, Dante created this huge wound in the Christian culture's psyche. And Joyce began with that. So he makes fun of people attending a wake, like they do in Ireland, and attending the body, and this person is gone, disappeared. And Joyce saw the absurdity of that, and that's where it begins.
Bob, what's your source on that, as Ned St. Baptist, John the Baptist would say? What's your source on that one?
James Joyce himself.
Okay, that's from speaking to him from the grave?
Yes.
But now, that's an important point, Bob, because there's some people who know, how can we know the dancer from the dance? That's William Butler Thal or Yeats? Bob?
William Butler Thal?
Yeah, no, who said, how can we know the dancer from the dance?
William Butler Yeats, but who's the other guy you thought it was?
Oh, I thought it was your old butler, Thal.
No, that was Tom Touche. It was my butler.
Here's the thing, Bob. How can we deal with people who say, well, I don't believe in you talking to someone from the grave? I mean, it's the important thing is the content, right? What you're talking about, not your source. How would you react to someone who doubts when you say, I'm talking to someone from the grave?
I don't care.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But let me ask this. Dante just did exactly what you were saying that Frank Zappa and everybody wanted, an ice pick to the head. So why would Joyce react to that negatively when he took and put an ice pick in the head of Christianity by writing the Divine Comedy and the Levels of Hell?
Well, it's who your audience is. The ice pick, yes, is the method, but who your audience is. And his audience was the Christian zombies. And so he attracted attention with Ulysses, and then he says, okay, I got them. They think I'm a great writer. Now I'm going to really go to work on them. And so he stuck it to the Christian culture, and that was built on Dante's vision.
Oh, so he continued Dante's vision instead of to – he wasn't pissed off at Dante.
He reinvented it.
Well,
he was angry at Dante, but you're on to the postmodern insight that by him attacking that, he actually perpetuates it. That's the problem. You know, Paul Krassner and the hippies took on the CIA and ended up working for the CIA. Same problem. You resist something, you perpetuate it. That's why if someone disagrees with me, I resist that.
Bob, that is perfect.
Caring.
That's what I wanted to lead into because of all of Roy's playing Alan Watts over the years. Watts says, if you acknowledge your enemy, you empower them. So if we follow what McLuhan learned from Joyce, if we acknowledge the hidden effects of what we invent, do we indeed empower them? Do we indeed empower the hidden effects?
I would give silence as an answer to that.
That is great, right out of the Cajun mode. Very good, Bob. Thank you for that. We need a little silence. And Bob, you know, my lecture on Joyce inventing experimental cinema and disguising it as a book, we showed the Hollis Frampton film Gloria, where he actually incorporated a 1910, 1911-ish film of the song Finnegan's Wake. And we know that the song Finnegan's Wake has the apostrophe. Joyce dropped the apostrophe because he knew Zappa would eventually say the crux of the biscuit is the apostrophe. So in doing this, he realized that the song was about a guy who's in his coffin and all his friends are partying at the typical Irish wake, and the whiskey bottle goes flying across the room and drips some life liquid, which is whiskey, in his mouth, and the guy comes and pops up from the coffin. He says, I'm not really dead. My question to you, Bob, is, are you that guy who's popping up out of the coffin?
Exactly. When my father, in the 20s and early 30s, with his Priory of Sion, and I'm talking about the Priory of Sion, everybody's wondering where it is, Holy Blood, Holy Grail. Well, it was my father and his gang, which became the Secret Council 10. In the 20s and 30s, they studied Joyce's, what was called, for Finnegan's Wake, was called Work in Progress. It was excerpted and serialized in Transition magazine, mainly. A few other magazines had it. And I always knew that my father was at a meeting of the Priory Sion, and had been poring over Joyce's work to figure out what it is, because these people need to know what was going on. They understood the culture and the artists were avant-garde perception modules, early warning systems, so they had to keep up on it because they were interested in maintaining power. So he would come home, and for the next 24 hours, he would call me Tim Finnegan. Yeah, actually, he would say, Tim Finnegan. Like, this is a way of getting rid of the Joyce workshop he'd just been through, and he would accost me with this. So I grew up with the name Tim Finnegan, so certainly. Now, I knew James Joyce as a kid, and I later realized, since he was a good friend of my father's, that he had embedded my and my wife, Connie Dobbs, into Finnegan's Wake. Connie Dobbs, known as Carolyn Dean, but the real name Connie Dobbs. This was in Finnegan's Wake, and I infuriated members of the Finnegan's Wake Society in New York from 93 to the year 2000. We meet once a month and do Finnegan's Wake, and actually had a more specialist group, and we meet every 2 weeks, so I was always with these people. And very quickly, as we went through Finnegan's Wake, I kept seeing my wife and my life in there more than I had, because when you do Finnegan's Wake in a group, you experience it better, deeper. Can't do it by yourself. It's meant to be a group brainwashing, a group pouring over something. So in the group situation with these intelligent people, more and more I could see was about me and my wife and how Joyce had knew of our lives and embedded in there, and the Shemin, Sean, and Issy. And it got to the point that I was exclaiming, wow, another page about me. That the local, there was an old dentist there in the group, and he said, "Bob, if you say that one more time, I'm going to punch you out." I just ignored him. 3 weeks later, he was dead.
Well, that's why we all read in all the Finnegan's reading groups, the Finnegan's Wake.